I call this meeting of the House Housing Committee and Finance Committee to order. Time is 3:15. Let it be seen that we have quorum. So we have a very busy agenda today, so we're going to kind of cruise through it here quickly. But before we do that, if I could have a motion to approve last meeting's minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move the approval of the minutes from February 18th, 2025.
Representative Nash moves the minutes. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. All right, so we'll move to first item on the agenda. We're going to be moving it around a little bit today. So we're going to start now with House File 457. So with that, we'll welcome Representative Harder to the front. Make the motion that, we'll be moving House File 457 to the Tax Committee. So welcome Representative Harder to committee. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Igel and members, and I'm very excited to share with you House File 457, which would establish a new tax credit and grant program for expenses incurred in converting buildings from one use to another. Qualifying projects would include conversions from commercial use to another use that a building was not intentionally built for, or to convert vacant floor space to income-producing uses. So examples of this would be schools converted to senior housing, churches converted to a daycare center, low-rise office buildings converted to mixed-use housing and/or commercial spaces. The bill proposes to provide a necessary incentive for revitalizing buildings in small and large communities across the state of Minnesota. This is a six-year program designed to provide assistance to convert vacant and or underutilized buildings into spaces that meet today's needs. So just a little bit of the program overview that I have. It's a temporary targeted program to meet current needs. Tax credit is equivalent to 30% of qualified conversion costs. The conversion work must be completed within 3 years of application for the credit. And reports are also required to the chair and the ranking minority members of the committee. And if you look on page 5, starting at line 514 or 5.13, it talks about what is in with that report. And then also the program sunsets after fiscal year 2031. So the bill also does the following. This will create jobs. It increases housing supply, and then also increases the valuation of buildings within a community. Think of your district and the potential buildings that could be revitalized. It is a win for communities. It decreases blight and helps to improve the vitality of the area. And, Mr. Chair, I have a number of people testifying today. And the first person that will testify is Aaron Hafferfin-Berg.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Igo, Lead Howard, and members. My name is Erin Hannafin-Berg. I am the Deputy Director and Director of Policy, Education, and Outreach at Rethos. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization founded in 1981 with the mission to lead people to connect with their shared places and spaces through preservation, adaptation, and activation. We've been serving as the lead organization for a coalition that is in support of this bill for catalyzing underutilized buildings, and I want to thank Representative Harder for carrying this legislation. Our testifiers will speak to how this bill will meet the needs of their constituencies, so I want to take an opportunity to share some information about a housing bill that you might not have realized you actually passed in 2023, the Minnesota Historic Structure Rehabilitation Tax Credit. Our organization, Rethos, led a lengthy grassroots effort to establish this credit, the historic tax credit, during the Pawlenty administration in 2010, and we've advocated for its extension twice since then. We keep close tabs on its effectiveness so that we can share with the highlights with policymakers, our members and supporters, and the state at large. The University of Minnesota Extension prepares an annual economic impact study, which demonstrates that the historic tax credit regularly returns over $9 in economic activity for every $1 that the state allows in state credits. The annual studies do not focus on the housing impact, so we've pulled some of that information together ourselves. By our estimation, the historic tax credit has created nearly 10,000 new apartment units since 2010. Recent examples of historic buildings that have been converted to housing include a casket factory in St. Paul, an armory in Stillwater, a storage facility in Moorhead, state hospital buildings in Fergus Falls, and a factory that made compression sprayers, whatever those are, in Hastings. And then there are the schools in Winona, New Ulm, Cloquet, Duluth, Sandstone, and International Falls, where the conversion of the Alexander Baker School into apartments is the first multi-use or multifamily development in that city in over 40 years. It's important to keep in mind that all of these projects that I've just mentioned happen to buildings that are listed in the National Register of Historic Places, which is a very small subset of the existing buildings in our state, to be sure. These buildings are, in most cases, 50 years old or older and have met strict criteria in terms of their historic significance and federal standards for the rehabilitation. We know that there are many more types of vacant and underutilized buildings that are newer or not historically significant or too modified to qualify for the National Register and can't use those historic tax credits. We know that the financing sometimes just doesn't work. We know that local communities are often fearful of what will happen to their local landmark if it becomes an eyesore and a burden, and so they opt to just bury the evidence and move on. And we know that there are a lot of buildings like this that are needlessly demolished every day. We know that a tax incentive like the CUB credit will work because we've seen its success at the state historic tax credit level, and we can imagine the possibilities for a whole range of other kinds of properties. More empty schools, shuttered nursing homes, idle factories, dwindling church congregations, and of course office buildings in small and large cities and suburbs alike. I urge you to support this bill and to work with your colleagues in the Taxes Committee to make sure that it is a priority for passage this session. Thanks again to Representative Harder and for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to provide you with any other information you may need as you consider this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hannafin-Berg. Our next testifier will be Mayor Carter. To you.
Thank you so much, Chair Igo, Vice Chair Dotseth, Lead Howard, and members of the committee. I'm St. Paul Mayor Melvin Carter, and it's a pleasure to be before you today. I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this proposal offered by Representative Harder for establishing the Catalyzing Underutilized Buildings Tax Credit here in the state of Minnesota. 2 years ago, our partners at the St. Paul Downtown Alliance led an effort in partnership with public and private stakeholders to create a downtown investment strategy to drive density, vitality, and desirability to downtown St. Paul. A key part of this strategy centers on redeveloping vacant downtown office space into housing. Since the pandemic, as many of you know, across the country, the hybrid work environment has resulted in loss of employees working in offices in downtowns across our country. That's been the case in our capital city of St. Paul. Currently, the overall vacancy rate for competitive office space in downtown St. Paul is around 32%. That doesn't account for office leases that haven't expired, but employees are largely not working in the office. High levels of vacancy have led to devalued office buildings and hardships for and closures of businesses and services previously supported by downtown employees. Stagnant and falling property values place additional strain on local governments, forcing tough choices between raising taxes or cutting essential services like public safety and infrastructure maintenance. Without intervention, this tax shift would contribute to a cycle of blight, reducing property values, and shift tax burdens into residential homeowners. The CUB tax credit is particularly well-suited at this moment to address significant issues that St. Paul and other cities are facing. This bill would provide a tax credit for 30% of the total cost of qualifying expenses for a qualifying project. The credit is modeled in many ways after that historic structure rehabilitation credit, which is also a very important economic development tool for local governments. I thank you for reinstating that historic tax credit in the 2023 legislative session. It's a proven tool to stimulate job growth and attract private investment in St. Paul and across the state. And this CUB tax credit will be another tool to build on those types of investments. It's costly, as you know. As you discuss often in this space, it is costly to reuse existing buildings, and the barriers to converting those buildings are significant. But we also know that the cost to demolish a vacant building and rebuild new is significantly more expensive, and the cost to not be able to provide the housing that we know that we need in communities across our state is the most expensive option. With current interest rates, property owners and developers struggle to secure financing for major renovations. Upgrading plumbing, electrical, and HVAC systems, along with critical infrastructure needs like sewer, water, and safety improvements, require large upfront investments. This tax credit will be one of the necessary tools for these reuses to be feasible. The adaptive reuse of vacant buildings to housing will create jobs, increase housing supply, increase the value of our downtown buildings and the downtown tax base, and increase our population downtown. St. Paul and the state of Minnesota are at a key turning point as we plan for adaptation of our downtowns in post-pandemic. And we know that our downtowns have much in common with suburban office complexes and different spaces and communities all across our state who are looking forward to this passing and moving forward. One of our goals for St. Paul is to bring 20,000 new residents to St. Paul's downtown, and this tax credit will be an important tool in achieving that goal and ensuring that downtown St. Paul's statewide contributions in terms of tax receipts continue to be strong and stable. This CUB tax incentive is a powerful tool that allows us to reimagine empty buildings as vibrant spaces that attract residents, businesses, and visitors. By reducing the financial burden on developers, this incentive makes it more feasible to repurpose aging buildings into housing, offices, retail, or cultural hubs, directly contributing to a more dynamic and more livable downtown. As these spaces fill with activity, property values rise, tax revenues grow, and surrounding businesses thrive, creating a ripple effect of economic revitalization. This approach aligns with our broader efforts to reimagine our downtown as a place where people want to live, work, and play, and ensuring long-term sustainability and prosperity. I ask you for your support today to move the CUB credit forward and give local governments another economic tool to create new housing across the state of Minnesota. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mayor Carter. Next on our agenda will be Joe Spencer from the St. Paul Downtown Alliance.
Chair Igel?
Yes.
May I rearrange?
Representative Harder.
May I please rearrange the list of testifiers?
Yeah, absolutely. Who would you like next?
Next will be Dan Colasan, Senior Director of Business of Development and Public Affairs from the Sherman Associates. And then following that, we'll have Joe Spencer, St. Paul Downtown Alliance, and then Katie Topinka, Director of Intergovernmental Relations, and then the last one will be Sam Friesen, Managing Director of Buildings at Fresh Energy.
That's totally applicable, Representative Harder.
Thank you.
All right, Dan Carlson,
yes.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Representative, and Chair Igel, Lead Howard, committee members, I'm Dan Collison. It spell corrects to collision, so it's always a stumbler. I never take offense. And I am pleased to say I'm here today as the Senior Director of Business Development Public Affairs for Sherman Associates. I'm here to testify in support of HF 457, express my many thanks to Representative Harder for authoring the CUB credit bill that is now growing bipartisan support in that it will bring public benefit and economic development across the state by incentivizing the adaptive reuse of and vacant buildings in the state. Sherman Associates, for my background, our company's background, is a commercial real estate development firm based in Minneapolis with a 46-year history doing multifamily and mixed-use properties across the state, most notably Minneapolis, St. Paul, and several suburban cities in the Twin Cities region, but also Duluth and a new project in pre-development in Rochester. 70% of all our apartment homes are designated as income qualified, affordable for seniors, working people, and individuals with special needs. We recently converted two large vacant commercial buildings in Minnesota to housing. The North Star Center East building in downtown Minneapolis delivered 216 new homes, with 20% of those homes being income qualified at 50% of area median income. And the Landmark Towers building in downtown St. Paul is delivering in only 30 days 187 new homes. Both of these adaptive reuse projects bring significant new value, vitality, and increased tax base to the state's leading downtowns. Both projects required changing the tax rate from commercial to residential, which is a part of this conversation, which is a lower rate, and yet both buildings' assessed values are now 6 times what they were previously when they were vacant commercial properties. So the property tax impact to cities, counties, and school districts is immense and at stake here. The projects would have been impossible without the return of the 20% historic state tax credit. And furthermore, both projects have required significant tax increment financing beyond the 20% credits to make the adaptive reuse even possible. So if passed, this CUB tax credit could ease the use of TIF and bolster the tax bases of Minnesota cities that are now, in some cases, facing the steepest commercial property tax base declines since the 2008 recession, which, if not addressed, will ultimately lead to a greater tax burden for homeowners to meet the ongoing needs of the cities across the state of Minnesota. So in summary, Sherman Associates believes this CUB tax credit to be the most effective economic development tool to leverage significant private investment to meet this moment to bring public value and meet the needs of our cities as they evolve to be places where more people live as well as work and participate in the flow of the life of these beautiful cities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collison. Next on our list then will be Mr. Spencer. That's a great name you have there. To you. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo. I'm Joe Spencer. I'm president of the St. Paul Downtown Alliance, and I'm here in support of HF 457. As Mayor Carter mentioned, a couple of years ago, we assembled a steering committee of business leaders, grassroots leaders, and economic development partners from across downtown St. Paul to create our downtown investment strategy. And after a year-long progress, we put this report out last year, and the number one recommendation was for all of us to find a way to accelerate the conversion of unused and unusable commercial office space into housing. There are a number of reasons for this, and I'll try to keep my comments brief here. First of all, again, we're not unique in this. I serve on the board of the International Downtown Association, and this story is playing out across the country. But in downtown St. Paul, last year, vacancy in office space rose from 22% the year before to 32%. And I can tell you it's going to go up significantly again here in 2025. When we look at buildings, especially in the core of downtown, we're seeing buildings that by the end of the year will have occupancy of in the 20% range and being basically vacant with a net operating income that is negative. These become huge liabilities for the downtown. These empty buildings hurt downtown property values, they hurt businesses, and they hurt tax revenue. But if we can breathe new life into these buildings, we're going to need some support to do that. But if we can do that, we're going to bring new energy, new residents. We're going to create much-needed housing and again, revitalize downtown by having a better mix of users. We see across the country that the downtowns that have a stronger residential base are the most vibrant, and they're doing the best at attracting more jobs and economic growth. The other important piece of this, as these downtown property values are falling and tax revenues are falling, that's resulting in a tax increase for single-family homeowners and renters across the city. And this is true not just for St. Paul. It's true across the state. So this is a really important opportunity for us to help provide property tax relief that is much, much needed and I think is going to get worse. And then finally, as an added bonus, coming out of this study, we worked with a firm called Gensler. They've studied 1,500 buildings across the U.S. and Canada. And what they determined is a lot of these buildings we have downtown, we studied 20. 10 of them came back as strong conversion candidates. But more importantly, they showed us we have the opportunity to create over 2,000 units of housing. And, again, as this added bonus, to save over 100,000 tons of CO2 emissions in the process. We put more people to work using less materials, end up with much-needed housing, and have some CO2 savings to boot. So I guess in closing, I just want to encourage you to support this smart, cost-effective way to stabilize downtowns and main streets, grow housing, and strengthen local economies. Thank you much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. Next on our list, then, will be Katie Topinka. Welcome to committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo and committee members. My name is Katie Topinka. I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of Minneapolis, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify in support of House File 457. Like many cities across the state and country, Minneapolis has experienced a significant change for office space needs coming out of the pandemic, particularly in the downtown core, but also in surrounding areas. From 2023 to 2024, the estimated market value of downtown commercial properties decreased by 13%, and we anticipate that values will continue to decline. As downtown office buildings decline in value, particularly relative to other uses in the city, it shifts property tax burden, as you've already heard about from other testifiers, primarily to residential taxpayers. It also affects the statewide economy. And so in response to those challenges, the city of Minneapolis has expedited processes and forged collaborations with a lot of different partners to develop and execute strategies for downtown transformation. You already heard about the great example from Mr. Collison of the North Star Center, that's now Groove Lofts. And so the proposed Cub Credit would help create more projects like that, which would help to revitalize downtown, but also increase the value of buildings, as you heard about in that example, which will help to ease the burden on residential property taxpayers, many of whom are low to moderate income homeowners. Bringing people downtown looks different than it once did, and turning once commercial office spaces into housing is a key element of the City of Minneapolis' strategy to bring people back. I will also note that the League of Minnesota Cities supports this. This is not just a Minneapolis and St. Paul issue, even though you've heard from both of us today. This is something that cities across the state are trying to solve for. We know the state is facing a challenging budget picture, but we hope there can be room for a tool like this that really brings a return on investment and increases revenues for both state and local government. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you to Representative Harder for carrying the bill, and just appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Topinka. And the last member on our list then will be Sam Friesen. Welcome to committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Igo. My name is Sam Friesen, Managing Director of Buildings at Fresh Energy. Thank you for your time, everybody, representatives. And my name is Sam Friesen. I'm with Fresh Energy. We're a 30-year-old Minnesota-based nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization. We work to drive and shape bold policy solutions to achieve equitable carbon neutral economies. We appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of House File 457. We believe HF 457 is a good bill. We recognize there are increased challenges and costs associated with changing buildings use and renovating existing buildings to meet the needs of Minnesota's evolving economy. In addition to the immediate economic benefits for building owners and tenants, maximizing the use of Minnesota's existing building stock has potentially significant benefits for Minnesota's air quality and climate emissions. Preserving and renovating existing buildings is a low-carbon, common-sense approach to avoiding the upfront and substantial embodied carbon emissions that are inherent in concrete, steel, and materials of the superstructure of the building assembly. As this legislation moves forward, Fresh Energy recommends considering an additional tax incentive for building owners that achieve measurable carbon reduction emissions through electrification or other technologies. We would welcome the opportunity to work with the bill author and or proponents if there are mutual interest in such an approach. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Friesen. Is there any members from the public that wish to testify? All right, seeing none, we'll move into questions then for the bill author. I think first on the list will be Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Harder, thanks for the bill. Lead Howard will remember I tried to do something like this last year. This is better, so thank you for this. But this is going to, as Kennedy said, a rising tide will lift all boats. This is not just an urban issue. This is for those of us that either fish in or live in the outstate areas. You drive by a lot of schools and buildings that have just sat empty for a very, very long time. And I think this is a good approach that we can undertake. I did have a very brief question for Mayor Carter, if he's still here. And I'll ask it as he's walking up for the sake of speed. Mr. Mayor, this is obviously going to improve the taxable square foot of these buildings from an office space to now a residence. How do you envision that's going to positively impact your future levies as you're going down that road? Because you're going to have to maybe levy less because the value of certain buildings has gone up. Is that kind of where you're thinking?
Mayor Carter.
Chair Igo, Representative Nash, thank you so much for the question. We are certainly do everything that we can to be as disciplined as we can with regard to our fiscal management of the city. We're very proud of the AAA stable credit rating that our city has from the rating agencies. Yes, absolutely. It would help us not only to be able to continue to expand our tax base, but one of the things that we saw this year as I alluded to sort of loss in values of downtown buildings, we saw a significant dip this year in the property tax receipts that we were able to recover downtown, which of course has a whiplash effect on driving up property taxes in residential neighborhoods as well. So not only will it help us to stabilize that revenue level, it'll also help us stabilize how those increases are felt across the community.
Representative Nash, any follow-up?
Just a very quick follow-up. How is parking going to be thoughtful in some of these areas? Because some of these buildings that might get rehabbed don't have underground parking, and as an office structure, they may have been renting parking space. Is that, or have you thought that far down the road?
Mayor Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we're thinking about all of those things as the city. Our HRA operates a significant inventory of parking throughout the city. And in truth, as we increase the amount of residential properties that we have in our city, we have historically seen some of those parking ramps be full during the day, but then empty at night. And so it actually creates, I would imagine, we haven't necessarily done a formalized study of that, but I would imagine it would actually create a more complementary parking arrangement for workers and residents throughout the day.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, next on our list then, Representative Mamani Hiltzley. Did I get it right?
You did get it right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. thank you so much for being here and presenting this bill. So really quick, I am wondering, as I was looking through the bill, how do we define under revitalized? Because I don't think I saw a definition of that in the bill, unless I missed it. How do we define that?
Check it out.
What are the criteria for that?
Looks like Ms. Hanifenberg has the answer to this question.
Yes, Chair Igo, Representative. So let me understand your question. You were asking how we define underutilized?
Yes. How do we define that?
Yes, that may be something that we need to add a technical amendment to the bill. And actually, we have been working on amendments that we just weren't able to have prepared for this meeting, and with the intention that they would be it would be amended before it goes to taxes. So there were some points of clarification that we recognized needed to be made, and I think that could be one of them. To mostly, we're talking about things that are largely vacant or that are not able to return. You know, enough rental income to make the property be viable. And then we've also, you know, talked about how a change in use can be, you know, if you're taking an office to housing, obviously that's a clear change in use. But also if there had been a building that had been vacant for a period of time, and I think in our amendment we're proposing that would be 5 years, okay. That would also be essentially a change in use if you're going from vacancy to any use. So even if the previous use, for example, had been a historic apartment, mm-hmm. We see that a lot in our greater Minnesota communities where there's a retail space on the down floor or lower floor, but the upper stories are vacant. There have been offices or apartments up there. But if those apartments had been vacated and have been vacant for at least 5 years and are returned to a state of occupancy, then that would also be considered a change in use. So that may be more than you actually had asked, but hopefully that helps clarify a little bit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any follow-up, Representative?
Just one more question. So the bill mentions a proposed, a proposed sunset for the credit. So what is the rationale behind this? I'm just curious. And then how will the program effectiveness be evaluated before it expires?
Ms. Hanifenberg.
Yes, Chair Igo, Representative. The sunset was just, we wanted to make clear that this was a temporary program. This is not an obligation that we expect the state to carry indefinitely. We think that, you know, having a targeted program, and I believe also in the amendment, we're going to revise that so it's 2031. So it's a clear 6 years, I guess, from hopefully the date of enactment, that would be just, you know, it's to get us over this hump. It's really to jumpstart some revitalization in the communities that need it. And then in terms of evaluation, you know, we want a lot of the same kind of metrics that that have gone into the evaluation of the historic tax credit. So, you know, jobs created, who's working on them, what the pre and post tax or post conversion tax rates are. I think you could also add in there that there should be housing units created. As I said, we've had to kind of do that analysis ourselves and by kind of pulling together information that we find on Google and through the publicly available federal historic tax credit database. But I think that could be something that could also be amended to the bill.
Any follow-up, Representative?
Last one. So when we look at the state of Minnesota, you know, we're always talking about the 100,000, you know, unit we need for housing shortages. So I'm wondering what is or how many additional units are we expected to see come out of this initiative? Thank you so much.
Hanifenberg.
Yes, Chair Igo and Representative Hiltzi. It's kind of hard to quantify that right now. What we understand is that about 15% of the buildings that are vacant would actually be good candidates for residential conversion. And it may be that Joe Spencer or somebody else from the downtowns could speak more completely to that because they have had have done some of those studies. But this is not a magic tool for every single building that is underutilized out there, but it will definitely make a sizable impact.
Okay, and we are going to move to the next question because, like I said, we have a packed agenda to get through, so I think next on the list is Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and Mr. Mayor, good to see you, and you're my mayor from St. Paul, and I know you do want to try to do the best you can, not only for St. Paul, but you try to address the issue that we've seen statewide. We do have a housing crisis when it comes to the state of Minnesota, and we can address that together collectively, and thanks for supporting this bill and bringing it forward. I have a question that I need to follow up with, and how does this bill fit into Minnesota long-term strategy for addressing the statewide housing crisis and ensure sustainability development?
Who wants to take that one?
Mayor Carter. Chair, Representative Hussein, I'm obviously not the spokesperson to speak to the statewide strategy necessarily. I do have an answer to Representative about the question, the previous question, where St. Paul is concerned. We would expect, Mr. Spencer just testified to those buildings in the report that identified what buildings down in our downtown in particular would be key places that would conversion, that those buildings alone would create an opportunity for about 2,000 units. So as we think about the statewide need of 100,000 units, that would be downtown St. Paul's portion, obviously have a significant more advantage there. Representative, one of the things that I've learned about housing is that every housing strategy has got to be comprehensive, and that, the one thing that won't solve it is sort of any one sort of, a golden kind of strategy. All of those strategies, though, center around on all of the things that we're doing. We're advancing what we call in St. Paul an all-in housing approach that says we need to connect our ability to help people be first-time home buyers with our ability to protect residents who experience unsheltered homelessness and everything in between. One of the things that we've learned very well is the key to all of our housing goals centers around production of new units. That there's no way for us as a state, there's no way for us as a city, for us as neighborhoods to meet our housing goals without producing new units. Whenever we hear the term housing crisis, we have to understand that just means we have more people than units. We are adding people, and so that creates a real imperative to continue to add units. And so this creates, like I said, an opportunity to not just think about how we add units from built new construction from the ground up, but to think about those underutilized buildings, those kind of spaces that we have in all of our communities statewide as opportunities for housing because we need it.
Any follow-up, Representative?
No.
Okay. Yeah, just to dovetail a little the mayor's comments, I mean, this is kind of getting at that all-of-the-above approach of realizing that it's not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, it's greater Minnesota as a whole. And
it's a statewide issue, yes.
Yeah. We're addressing it together. So.
And thank you guys.
Next on the list will be Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder, for the bill. I think this is, you know, a really great step in the right direction of trying to figure out how to use buildings that are underutilized in our cities and towns across the state. Since a majority of them will probably be used for residential, hopefully, is there anything or have you thought much of the idea of maybe making some of those conversions to housing be required to also have some type of affordability, whether it's through units like how Sherman Associates did in Minneapolis or something else, just to ensure that not everything that's coming on will then also still be out of reach for the people kind of at the lowest income levels.
That's a technical question. Aaron, do you know that? Do you have an answer on the housing?
Ms. Hanvenberg.
Yes, I'll take a stab at that as well. Thank you, Chair and Representative Igbaje. You know, we don't have that in the bill, obviously, now. I think, you know, these projects are so complex to fund that quite a few historic rehabilitations, even, you know, not using obviously the CUB credit, but are dependent on low-income housing tax credits. And I think especially as you get into communities in greater Minnesota where there may be more of a need for senior housing, for example, and there's limited incomes there, that those kinds of sources will be tapped as much as possible. And we do want to make sure that this credit can be readily paired with those federal incentives when they're available. We have not, as of yet, you know, thought of how to put a metric in there, I guess, for affordable.
Representative Bagje.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I definitely hear that. I hope that as you guys continue to work on the bill that will be a large consideration, because I do think that's part of, you know, with the housing crisis, we had a presentation yesterday. It was more about home buying, but still, like, people are searching for something that they can actually fit in their budget. And we know that especially renters tend to be house burdened pretty quickly. So I kind of also share Representative Nash's concerns about, you know, what will the benefit going back into the cities overall also look like as well, too. So I think those are just things to, if those can get fleshed out as the bill continues to move forward. But thank you.
Next on the list will be Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and to Representative Harder, thank you for bringing this bill. Personally, this is one that I know myself and my community is rallying behind and really excited for. I'm curious in the bill, you know, one of the things that we've heard as we are looking at how we build housing, where we build it, and planning for the future is sort of that balance between wanting to build housing and also balancing out the tax burden and the tax impact of preserving our commercial spaces. And I'm curious, you mentioned that, you know, what kind of makes a sweet spot or what would be a building that is kind of ripe for conversion? Would maybe this is a question for you on the end there. There's a vibe. I think you were striking on this chord. But I'm just curious, like, is it allowable in particular zoning types, locations? Is it the type of building? Is it the use that it was? What makes it right for conversion?
Ms. Hanvenberg.
Yes, Chair Igo and Representative Kozlowski. My understanding is that a lot of it has to do with the actual dimensions of the building and the size. You know, this is a particularly challenging thing for buildings that are more recent office buildings because they were built with a larger footprint, and, you know, relied on artificial lighting more so than historic buildings did, for example. They all had to use daylighting because the lighting sources weren't all that great. But as those larger buildings were constructed, then the floor depth just becomes so great that if you were going to convert them to apartments, for example, you'd have to have some kind of light well in the middle just for livability's sake. I think Dan Collison could probably speak to this a little bit because they found some unique ways to address this in the Groove Lofts building. So there's kind of a sweet spot for buildings that are readily adaptive and others that aren't. And certainly the square footage of individual floor plates and the overall size of the building makes that challenging. As Mayor Carter pointed out, there's a lot of buildings in downtown St. Paul in particular that are historic and are of a size and scale that would actually adapt very readily. So I think, you know, there's other places in greater Minnesota that have buildings of that kind of more modest size that would also be good candidates.
Thank you. Brief follow-up, Representative Kozlowski.
Sure. Yeah, great. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate that answer and, you know, the differences and the nuances of greater Minnesota and kind of the seven-county metro. I think one of the last points is that, you know, talking with developers and folks in our community who and across the state who are looking to do conversions, as we've heard, is it's costly and it's timely, you know, asbestos to restrooms to central air and so much more. And then you add on the process of having to go through building permits and planning and those types of things. And I'm just curious, you know, those all add on more time and more cost and expense. And as we're working on different bills to make it easier and cheaper to get more housing online, I'm curious if there are provisions that might be barriers or things that you see this committee could do to help expedite even more as we're going to hopefully put these tax credits to conversion, but then make it easier to actually convert and get them up online through the building and zoning processes.
Ms. Hanifenberg, and maybe some of those things too could be an email to the committee too as we keep diving into more policy ideas.
Yeah, Chair Igo, I was going to ask if I could phone a friend on that who actually knows more about the whole development process and permitting, Dan Collison, if that's all right.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Collison comes up.
Mayor Carter.
Thank you so much. If it'd be okay, Representative Agmaje, I would suggest in response to the question that you asked, we're a city that's very passionately in favor of building and expanding our stock of affordable housing, and so that'd be something I'd be interested in talking through. Obviously, we would ask for a recognition that adding and creating affordability requirements increases the cost of that housing as well, and so that may be that would be something that I would ask that we would consider so that it doesn't turn into sort of a mandate for local funding that we don't have a source for.
Thank you, Mayor Carter. Mr. Collison.
Yeah, Chair Igo, Representative Kozlowski, thank you for those questions. And local municipalities play a key role, and all developments will need to apply and develop the projects in relationship to inclusionary zoning policy that has requirements. All of that will be intact to where there can be and should be affordable income qualified as a part of the development. To Mayor Carter's comment, various buildings are given to various kinds of sizing and amenities that fit different income levels and approaches that will make some buildings more given to an affordable product or a workforce attainable, a language that we're using of that missing middle of income by their natural state of being. And that was true with Groove Lofts as well, which is mostly middle income with that affordable component. To your question, Representative Kozlowski, about the acceleration or overcoming obstacles, there's so much to be done. Our cities are beginning to look at ways to accelerate housing projects, and especially affordable housing projects through the permitting process, look at fee reductions. We've seen that in Minneapolis. I know that St. Paul, the Downtown Alliance, are working very hard on that as well. Those are all very important local government decisions that the work group and those who are advocating for the credit will use as a point of acceleration. But it will be a local municipality level of importance that will need to solve those issues. And I know Duluth, as I serve on the chamber in Duluth and love Duluth, is very interested in that intersection of bringing projects to market as quickly as possible and as affordable as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Collison. Lead Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thank you, Representative Harder, for bringing the bill forward. I think this is exactly where our heads need to be at. Like, what can we do to think differently and incentivize housing, maybe where we haven't thought of it before. And so this is the right kind of proposal for us to be considering. A few members took some of my similar questions, both Representative Igbaje and Representative Kozlowski, so I'll just make brief comments, which is that I really see a bill like this, the coalescing behind some of the policy reforms we need to consider as well. If we really want to maximize its impact, we need to make it, we know it's really challenging to for housing development to move forward. And so to me, this is a proposal that fits with other ideas that are in the policy reform bucket. And then as you're moving this bill through the process, I would encourage you to think about a couple things. One, you know, given the limited resources in our housing budget overall, you know, I would consider narrowing the uses to uses that will become housing. You know, the to me, that's the where there's the biggest need. And so it's a little more expansive than I guess I would like. I'd like to see the uses narrowed to conversions that are going to yield housing units. And then secondly, you know, when we make public investments in housing through our Minnesota housing budget and otherwise, we do often attach some affordability requirements. And so if we're using public investment, I really think we should look at let's really find a way to make sure we're targeting the greatest need, which is those affordable housing units where we're so short. So just that's food for thought. But thank you for bringing this really important bill forward, and I hope to see it keep moving.
Thank you, Lead Howard. Closing comments from Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Argo and members. And I really appreciate you taking the time to hear this very important bill. I'm very, like I said, I'm very excited with the partners today, the testifiers. Housing is of great concern, not just for the Metro, but for greater Minnesota as well. And this is a great bipartisan bill to help move that needle so that we can obtain more housing for individuals and keep them in our communities. So I really appreciate your time and your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. And just to, again, I'll dovetail. This is Greater Minnesota and Metro Minnesota working together to find solutions to our housing crisis. And I think it's setting a good tone for what this committee can continue to do throughout the year. So with that, I'll renew my motion for House File 457 to refer to the Tax Committee. So with that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We're on our way to taxes. Thank you. All right, our next item on the agenda will be House File 297, so that'll be my bill, so I'll be handing the gavel off to Vice Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, members. We're going to be hearing House Bill number 297. Chair Eigel, go ahead and explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Dotseth and members of the committee. So this is a bill today that's for the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency. It's going to be appropriating $2 million for their revolving fund for acquiring tax-forfeited homes. So I had the opportunity over the summer to tour with AOA some of the projects they've been doing. And what they've been doing is finding these tax-forfeited homes, going in, fixing them up, and then selling them back on the market as trying to get into that affordable market. And then the profits that they get from that, they put back into their fund to continue to purchase these homes and revitalize them in communities across Greater Minnesota. So it's a really exciting program, again, kind of getting at that idea that we all have of this housing approach is not just a one-size-fits-all. It's multiple different approaches to get at fixing this concern that we have that we're 105,000 housing units down in our state. And it's helping to address that lower-cost home that is missing from the equation, as we heard yesterday. You know, we're down 200% in homes under $300,000. And this is getting at that solution. So with me today, I have a few testifiers that we'll hear from, and then happy to answer any questions we have on the bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make mention that this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion as well. Thank you. We'll hear the testifiers, please.
I think first will be Scott Zahorek.
Wonderful.
And I think he's on Zoom.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to come before you this afternoon. My name is Scott Zvorek, and I'm the Executive Director of the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency, or better known locally as AEOA. AUA is a community action agency serving by legislation St. Louis, Lake, and Cook counties, which combine are over 13,000 miles and 15% of the state. Over the years, we've had 9 neighboring counties ask us to provide some of our services in their counties where their local agencies don't provide these services. So we also provide services in Aiken, Carlton, Chisago, Crow Wing, Isanti, Itasca, Coochiching, and Pine. Our service area combined then is over 26,000 square miles and 30% of the state. AEOA is a nonprofit 501c3. We're in good standing on all of our current forms and filings. But like you just heard, we've got a shortage of affordable housing in Northeast Minnesota. So I'm coming before you today for asking for your help and support for this housing project. HF 297 is a request from AEOA for $2 million in one-time funding, which will be used in partnership with St. Louis County and the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board to acquire tax-forfeited homes from St. Louis County, rehabilitate them, and sell them as workforce housing and to first-time home buyers that are eligible buyers. These funds, as Chair Igo said, would be used to create a revolving pool of funds to rehabilitate these homes. And then once they're completed, they'll be sold to eligible buyers through a conventional mortgage. And then the proceeds of the sales will be returned to the pool to complete future projects. We know there will be a value gap in each project of the difference between the total development cost of the home and the sale price of the home, which will be based on post-rehabilitation appraisal of the property. So the value gap funding will be sought separately and be replenished as needed. So far in the project, we do have a commitment from the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund of $1 million in an interest-bearing construction financing loan. And we've also locked in a $250,000 commitment from the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board for the value gap on the first 5 homes. So we've been working with St. Louis County staff and have selected the first 4 properties to be rehabilitated. There's 1 in Chisholm, 2 in Eveleth, 1 in Aurora, and these properties have been transferred to the cities they're in, and we're now in the final stages of transferring the properties to AEOA. So as soon as we have these properties in hand, we will begin construction on them. We estimate it'll take a full construction season to complete each property. And all of these projects will pay prevailing wages to the contractors that work on the projects and also will help the local businesses that provide the supplies and materials needed for the projects. This project will help put a significant yet affordable dent in the housing issues in Northeast Minnesota. And I'd like to thank all of you for your help and support of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zork, for your testifying today. Our next testifier is Julie, I'm going to screw your name up again. How do you pronounce it?
Marinucci. Thank you, Vice Chair and committee members. Julie Marinucci, St. Louis County. I am the Deputy County Administrator and was previously the Land Commissioner for St. Louis County and spent a lot of time down here last session talking about tax forfeited properties as it related to the Tyler litigation. And this is kind of an extension of this opportunity around how to leverage these tax forfeited properties and put them back into use. We spent a lot of time talking about the continuum of housing, and a lot of it, you know, the previous bill you had heard was around these commercial properties and repurposing them. There's a lot of discussion around new construction. And what fits in the middle is this rehab market on single family homes. And these are the homes that are nested in your neighborhoods. These are the homes that have that condensed tax base. It creates the aesthetic of your community. And we're trying to find a way to creatively approach the ability to preserve these properties, preserve that investment, preserve that structure for the benefit of the communities, for the benefit of the state. And with that, these properties are challenging. We've talked quite a bit about how challenging these tax forfeited properties are. And in working with IRRR and with AEOA, we found a way to assemble this unique partnership that brings forth The funding brings forth the ability to leverage tax forfeited properties. Minnesota Chapter 282 does allow for the conveyance of these properties for less than market value, again, to incentivize the remediation of blighted situations, and then also put them back into the highest and best uses determined by the communities. AEOA comes to the table with a long history and experience in this space, not only in completing the work, but developing also the workforce that goes through to help strengthen our local economy. We struggle if we're not able to rehab it. What ends up happening is we are a party to perpetuating blight in these communities, and these properties end up having to be torn down, and they become that vacant lot, that hole in a neighborhood block that someone's parking their camper on, or maybe there's a garden that's put in there. And we start losing that housing density, that sense of community pride around the rehab. So I think that this bill and the ability to seed this fund for AEOA creates a really great model that isn't just for St. Louis County and isn't just for northeastern Minnesota. This is an issue that plagues communities around the state and is a model that I think is really a huge win for our region to be able to utilize these properties and address one small segment of that continuum in the housing market.
Any members of the public that would wish to ask any questions or testify? If not, any questions from our members? Representative Abadji.
Thank you. Just want to say thank you, Representative Igo, for bringing this bill. I've actually had a lot of conversations with AEOA about their plans to continue to have opportunities to build more housing, more workforce, affordable housing. I think actually that the method that this bill takes is pretty strong. It's something that we've been looking at to figure out maybe if we can get it done statewide as well. So I'm thankful for you guys to kind of be leaders in this and kind of showing the rest of us what is possible. So very supportive, looking forward to continuing the great results that you guys have already seen in your region of the state. So thank you.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, and thank you for those comments, Representative Abadji, and thank you for signing on and being a part of this bill with us today, too. I wanted to make sure I said that today, so thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Dotseth. Okay, I've got a series of questions now. Just also want to thank you for the work you're doing and echo Representative Abadji's comments about an exciting model. You know, in particular, using the revolving loan model just allows us to multiply the positive impacts. And I just think it behooves of us to kind of think about other ways to sort of maximize our precious resources. And so thank you for your work. Thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Representative Eichel?
Is there any other questions?
One more follow-up question would be Representative Scraba.
Thank you. It does affect my district. AEOA has been, and I represented Agbaje. I absolutely, they're there. They're ready to do it. They've done it already. Chisholm, Minnesota, we toured a house this summer where they literally went inside, tore it apart, and they're rebuilding it for the family that's going to be using it. And in the past, we used to tear those houses down. The IRRRB, we would just go in and rip them down, and that was the best. Now we're finding out that that's a great starter home for a lot of folks. That's that next level. So this is really exciting. If we can get this one through and over, it would help our area a lot. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Any further discussion? If not, this bill will be bill number two. Oh,
Chair, I'll make some closing comments. Yep. If that's all right.
I think that's acceptable. Thank you.
Members, thank you for the discussion today. And again, this is what's really exciting about what AEOA is doing is that they've created a partnership, right? They're working with local governments, they're working with counties, they're working with state agencies, they're working with nonprofits. And what they're doing is they're taking family homes and communities and revitalizing them and putting families back in them. and we put families back in these homes, we're putting kids back in our schools, and we're revitalizing our communities. And that is a core tenet of what we're trying to accomplish in this committee. And like Representative Bagje said, this is an opportunity for maybe something that we could be looking at as a committee, that we could start revitalizing more homes like this in our state, and offering that level of homeownership to people and revitalizing not only just greater Minnesota communities, but our suburbs and our metro as well. So thank you for the consideration today, and thank you for the discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Eagle. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
I will now turn the gavel back over to Chair Eagle.
Give me a second here to get back. Got it. All right, the last bill on our agenda today then will be House File 1067, and that'll be Vice Chair Dotseth.
Ta-da!
All right, Representative Dotseth, House File 1067. We'll be I'll be making a motion to move that to taxes. Before we get that, we'll move to your thoughts on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Eagle. And now that we found our notes, we'll be able to explain our bill. Bill number 1097 is actually a fairly simple bill today that we're actually looking at. This bill seeks to make an adjustment to Minnesota State Housing Credit parameters to better align with state tax credits, tools that needed for workforce housing development in greater Minnesota. The state housing tax credit allows eligible Minnesota corporate and individual taxpayers to contribute to the tax credit contribution fund, and in return they receive a tax credit to help offset the state tax credit liabilities. Since its conception in 2023, the state housing tax credit has sought to help housing development throughout the state and leveraging millions of private funding to help support both rental and owner-occupied housing and developments. Currently, the state housing tax credit is limited to income-restricted projects. However, the need in greater Minnesota continues to be market rate and workforce housing to support local economic development. The proposed change would allow projects that are in areas that qualify for the workforce housing and development program, which to support market rate housing, can also receive funding from state housing tax credits contribution account. This change is aligned with the original intent and the heart of the bill, the legislation which was developed in to be a flexible program back at the time. This can work in all corners of the state and whose funding is driven to Minnesota taxpayers. With me today, I've got several testifiers that actually represent greater Minnesota development perspective, a greater Minnesota business perspective, and Greater Minnesota City perspective. With that, I'd like to introduce my testifiers today.
Skip, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry, right. I could not hear.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Igo and members of the Housing Committee. My name is Skip Duchesneau, and I'm the president of DW Jones Incorporated. We're an affordable and market-rate multifamily developer located in Walker, Minnesota. Our area that we work is north of St. Cloud and to all the borders. We cover a lot of territory. We get calls from communities all the time looking to help solve their housing problems. There is nowhere near enough funds to help solve these problems, but we do get success one project at a time. I would like to thank you first for your past funding of Minnesota Housing Finance, the Workforce Housing Development Program, and the State Housing Tax Credit Program. All these programs are critical to the development of housing in Greater Minnesota. I live in Greater Minnesota, I work in Greater Minnesota, and I do understand the dynamics that take place here. Our firm has been successful in developing workforce housing development properties when the program was administered by DEED and now by Minnesota Housing Finance today. We have received funding for 8 projects in communities of Thief River Falls, Glenwood, Pelican Rapids, Alexandria, Long Prairie, Roseau, and War Road. These funds have allowed us to develop a total of 348 units constructed and occupied, creating housing to provide housing for employees to help support local employers. We also have 64 additional units under construction in Alexandria right now. We are proud of the partnerships we have developed with employers such as Marvin, Polaris, DigiKey, Long Prairie Packing, to name a few. Last year, Minnesota Housing Finance had the largest amount of funds available for Workforce Housing Development Program as it ever has had. And once again, thank you. The agency had a record request for funding from all over the state, but it was only able to fund approximately 50% of the applications. We had applications submitted that did not get awarded funding in Ely, Silver Bay, Roseau, Thief River Falls, Fergus Falls, and Brainerd. These were all great projects, and we felt so bad that we were not able to help these communities. We also have received our first housing state tax credit contribution in 2024. This contribution has allowed us to move forward in Thief River Falls with a project that did not get funded by Minnesota Housing Finance. It is hard to develop in Greater Minnesota right now. The numbers simply do not work. High construction costs, interest rates make it almost impossible to develop in Greater Minnesota without assistance, excluding some of the larger communities such as Duluth and Rochester. We need more funding in the Workforce Housing Development Program. It is the best and most efficient way to deliver housing to smaller communities in Greater Minnesota. Because of the experience with the State Housing Tax Credit and the Workforce Housing Development Program, we firmly believe you should support the changes being suggested in House File 1067. By removing income restrictions from the State Housing Tax Credit when paired with Workforce Housing Development dollars, it will allow us to do more and bring employer funding into the mix. The issue that we have with many of these communities that I listed out, we have great employers who pay their people enough money that they don't qualify for affordable housing. They, and the 80% area median income restriction is a restriction. Their employees get paid more than that. And they want to support projects and put their own dollars into projects that can help employees that they can employ. The state will not solve the housing problem by themselves. Getting community-minded employers to help solve housing issues in their communities, which will benefit them, is the answer. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Duchesneau. Next on the list then will be Daniel Lightfoot. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. For those that aren't familiar with the league represents the collective interest of 841 member cities across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Vice Chair Dotseth for agreeing to author the bill and providing a great overview, and for you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing the bill today. As Skip was pointing out, you know, we know that cities and their developer partners, along with the private sector, all play a role in helping to address the housing needs that help foster local economic development, grow communities, and support job growth in our cities across the state. And it was in that spirit that the state housing tax credit was created as a flexible tool to provide an incentive for corporate and individual taxpayers to contribute to the state housing tax credit program and fund and individual projects in their city to help support housing development. And for the state to make those public dollars go further by leveraging that private investment. The program allows companies like DigiKey, who you'll hear from in a little bit, benefit from directly supporting housing projects that they need to support growth in their areas like Thief River Falls that simply do not have enough housing to support business expansion. It also helps support developers like Skip that need additional funding and resources to bridge the gap, which is ever apparent in greater Minnesota, so that more workforce housing development can happen in greater Minnesota. Certainly, despite the program's success in 2024, after being fully subscribed, of the $9.9 million tax credits available, this bill tweaks that program to better align the tax credit with the unique needs of greater Minnesota, which is the creation of market rate workforce housing. It doesn't eliminate the affordability parameters in the original legislation. It just allows projects that can comply with workforce housing development parameters, which don't include affordability thresholds, to also get resources from the state housing tax credit. With that, Mr. Chair, appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to stand for questions as well, and thank you for the support for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Next on the list will be Libby Murphy. Welcome to committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Hello. Chair Igo and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. For those of you who aren't familiar with us, MHP provides direct community development services to rural communities and tribal nations rooted here in the state of Minnesota, and we do that work nationally. We also produce original research, and it's our research and our on-the-ground technical assistance that influences our state and federal policy work that we do. Again, I want to thank you all for hearing the bill, and Representative Dotz for carrying this technical fix, and Chair Howard, who was the chief author at the time when the bill was first enacted. We are very fortunate as a state to have the state housing tax credit. It's unique to have a state tax credit, and let alone one that is this flexible and this simple. The state housing tax credit bill was initiated by a large coalition of businesses, local government, and housing leaders across Minnesota. In partnership with many who develop housing in greater Minnesota, the program was designed to be simple, flexible, and work in rural areas as well as in the metro. It was designed so that it could support projects that don't always compete well in Minnesota Housing's qualified action plan. So MHP has been very invested since we first introduced this bill in 2018, we've continued to be invested in making sure that the program can work as effectively as possible. Last year, with Mary Tinkerthal, the former housing commissioner, we conducted a number of feedback sessions with developers who were able to access state housing tax credit contributions, as well as those who were hoping to do so in the future. One of the points of feedback that we heard that did require a legislative fix, and I will say MHFA has been a very receptive, accessible, and transparent in working with on this program, and we were able to do some things administratively, but this one does require legislative fix because there was a lot of confusion when developers wanted to pair the two programs together because state statute requires that the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Program prioritize projects that are with the most market rate units. Developers were concerned that if they secured a contribution to the state housing tax credit, then they might be penalized if they then went to secure resources for the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Development Program. So this tweak would just allow and create more certainty for developers who are looking to pair the two together as gaps have increased since both of those programs were enacted into law. So again, I Thank you, and I can stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy. And I think our last testifier then will be Mark Borseth, and I believe he's virtual. Please introduce yourself for committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Borseth. I'm the Senior Director of Community Development and Corporate Facilities for DigiKey Electronics at Thief River Falls. Chair Igo and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding House File 1067, which grants exemptions to the Minnesota Tax Credit Program. So I support this bill. Minnesota is short more than 100,000 housing units, which I know you've heard a couple times today already. And in Thief River Falls, we have a current vacancy rate of 0.3%. Inflation and interest rates are creating a challenging environment, you know, to alleviate this need across all types of housing for all ages and all income brackets. But our greatest demand for housing in Thief River Falls is workforce housing, which we desperately need for DigiKey to continue to grow and succeed in Minnesota. You know, our entry-level starting wage at DigiKey is above the income limits to qualify for most housing income restricted programs, which makes it a little bit challenging. So the proposed amendment that would grant exceptions to the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Contribution Program to eliminate income restrictions when paired with the Workforce Housing Fund will provide a real beneficial alignment. And, you know, we're currently utilizing DigiKey as the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Contribution Fund in Thief River Falls, and we're thankful for this program. So any reduction in income restrictions or reduction in match requirements for the Workforce Housing Fund will be of great assistance to Thief River Falls and I think all outstate Minnesota communities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Representative Dodseth, for carrying this bill, and happy to answer any questions you may have for me.
Thank you, Mr. Borseth. With that, it concludes testimony, but is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? All right, seeing none, is there any questions from members of the committee? Lead Howard.
Thank you, President Dodseth, and thanks for bringing this bill forward. As the chief author of this tax credit, it's exciting to see it blossom and be utilized and be fully utilized last year. I do think it makes sense to make this change and make it more flexible for its use, especially in greater Minnesota, where some of the needs are a little different. The only thing I'd say is if we are going to expand the use, I think we should expand the resources we're putting into it. I am planning on introducing legislation to bump up the resource we're putting into this tax credit, knowing how effective of a tool it can be across the state. So glad to see it moving, and I think we can build upon it.
All right, thank you. Closing comments to you, Vice Chair Dodseth.
Closing comments, I would like to say thank you, members, for listening to this bill. I think we've come to realize that it's a work in progress, and this is what it is. We're working on a good bill and making it better. And what we're doing is there's just another tool in our toolbox that's going to help all of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Dodseth. And with that, I re-renew my motion to move House File 1067 to the Tax Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We're on our way to taxes. Thank you, members, for a great committee today. We got through three bills with time to spare, so that's great. We'll be back next week, Tuesday at 3 p.m. Be watching your emails for the agendas being posted. Thank you guys for a great committee. We are adjourned.